Claire, and you're listening to the Mother Love Podcast, a show where we talk about the journey of parenting. This is a space where guests open their hearts, gather their courage, and tell the truth about what it means to care for these messy and delightful little ones in today's big, wide, and often overwhelming world. We talk about the pressures, the steep learning curves, and the bittersweet reality of watching our children grow. Parenting asks us to be willing to feel it all, celebration and grief, joy and anguish, fear and courage. So take a breath, let these stories wash over you, and show yourself a little love.
Hi, Mother Love listeners. If anyone has an idea for a new way for me to say hello to guests, let me know. Maybe I'll start saying just like, hey, y'all, or hey, everybody, or I don't know. But I like every episode, I'm like, hey, Mother Love listeners. And maybe Rachel will have an idea.
I don't know. I like it because it gives some cohesion. Like, here, it's time to listen to Mother Love.
It's so true.
But I get the like, you do it every day.
Yes. But that was Rachel Waters speaking. She's here with me today. Rachel, I'm so grateful. And you came here all the way from Hamilton.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. And I have family here, so it was a good double blessing to get to see them and be here.
Yay. So, How long has it been since you've been to Helena?
We came for New Year's.
Oh, okay.
So not that long. We come quite often.
Yeah, so. Nice. Yeah. That's great. I love Helena so much. I grew up in Kalispell, went to school in Missoula.
Okay.
Spent a brief amount of time learning about California, and then came back to
Montana.
Ran back to Montana.
Some time in California as well for grad school. So
Cool.
Did it backwards.
Oh, funny.
From you.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's something special about the Helena community that like really, I just love this community so
That's
much.
Wonderful.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're here and we're going to talk about a lot of things today, which I'm looking forward to so much. But I thought it would make the most sense to just kind of start with present day and get a little snapshot of like, what does daily life look like for you and your family?
Yeah. Well, I have four children, so never a dull moment, a little chaotic, and they're all in school now. So that I thought, okay, once I get past the younger years, it'll get easier. And for those of you not there yet, it doesn't get any easier. It just gets busier. But so I have an almost 13-year-old son, Micah, and my daughter, Addie, is just turned 11. And then Emma is 8 and Chloe is 6. So they're about 2 years apart.
Yeah.
So
had you always planned on having a big family?
I did.
Do you come from a big family?
I'm the oldest of three.
Okay.
And for some reason, I just got in my head that I wanted 4. My mom actually had a stillbirth, and so she had 4.
Interesting.
And I really just was like, we'll have 2 and 2. We'll have a boy and 2 boys and 2 girls. And we got a boy and 3 girls. Oh. So my husband is just surrounded and my son's a little overwhelmed.
But
So
funny.
Daily life, my kids go to a public school. So the craziness in the morning, getting everybody out. And then I have some time to myself. I stay at home. So I do kind of laundry and dishes during the day.
Yeah.
And I volunteer a lot in my kids' classes. So I'm pretty involved in that. And then my daughters do dance and gymnastics, and my son plays soccer, and Chloe's starting to get into her kind of activities. So just full days, but I have a wonderful community to raise my kids in. My husband is an ER physician, so sometimes I feel like it's all on me to get everybody everywhere, and sometimes he can help.
Yeah.
And so I rely a lot on my tribe to do life with and really found that. My family is in Colorado and Ben's family's here in Helena. So when we moved to Hamilton, it was kind of like, okay, let's get established and figure out how to do this without family. But I think I've grown a lot in just reliance on friends.
Yeah.
And then my family comes to visit and Ben's family comes to visit too. So that we're a good distance away, but I really had to learn how to just rely on others. And my story tells that too.
Yeah.
My mom was very independent and kind of took care of everything and made it look easy.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, I can just do this all on my own. My dad worked a lot. Not that he was not present, but he just worked a lot. And so I just thought I need to like take care of 4 kids on my own. And you don't get them all at once.
Yeah.
Some people do, but we didn't. So I just kind of learned with each kid, okay, how do I balance this? And Ben's schedule's irregular. So we're still trying to figure out what that means between having him home, and there's one kind of schedule, and when he's gone, then there's another, and he works 12-hour shifts, so we're pretty atypical, I would say. But that's also just, brought me closer to my friends and allowed me to kind of hit rock bottom with my story and then realize it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah.
Because I think as women and as moms, for some reason, we just need to do it all on our own, and we can't and we shouldn't.
Yeah.
So.
It's true.
Yeah.
Do you look back and think, how did your mom...
Yes. Like, okay. All the time.
Because I've known moms who were also like that, but most of them had like alcohol or some sort of something that was like...
My mom exercised a lot. Okay. That was her outlet. And she really loved staying at home with us. And she also says too, it was a different time.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, you didn't have to have the Pinterest life and you didn't have to have your house immaculate. Although I feel like she did because she's just really incredible.
Yeah.
But she goes, Rachel, you remember it differently than what it really was like. I just remember her, like the house was clean. We had a home cooked meal. She played with us all the time. Mm-hmm. And she was always happy.
Yeah.
But that's not reality.
Have you checked to see if she's a robot?
She feels like it. I think she's like a octopus with five arms. And So she's really amazing. I really look up to my mom.
Yeah.
And just as a mother, as a woman. Mm-hmm. And she's really walked through my story with me.
Yeah.
And we've both grown. And, you know, having daughters, it'll be, I'm just interested and scared and like, it'll just see what their story is like, but I will have learned a lot from my mom, how to be there for them for whatever comes.
Yeah. It's one of those things where like, I feel like the pace of life just keeps accelerating and accelerating. And so when I almost can't use my imagination to like project into the future and imagine what it will be like for my kids to be parents. And it's just like, maybe it'll get like, maybe I'll hit a wall and go back to slow pace. I know I feel that as a mother myself. Like I'm like, we really should just move to the woods. And like,
my husband actually would probably prefer that. I'm like, no, we got to be around people.
I know.
And he kind of grew up doing not quite as many out of the schoolhouse things as I did, but
like extracurriculars.
And we did, and we're pretty intentional with what we're having them do, but there's times where it's like, oh my goodness, we're just doing too much and we can't have dinner together. And part of that again is our schedule, but I want them to be involved in things and I want them to be able to use their gifts and talents. And
same.
So that means that we're going a lot all the time. And
same.
Some days I have to step back and say, okay, what? I have to say no to good things.
Yeah.
Because I'm a yes person.
Yeah.
And so there's been, and I have my best friend is just like, okay, is this time to evaluate and see what you can take off your plate? And
oh, what a good friend.
She is. Yeah. She's amazing. And so, it's a constant balancing act of prioritizing yourself and then realizing, oh, I think I overextended a little bit and need to step back. So,
And I also think about, you know, my brother and I were involved in a fair amount of extracurricular activities, but my mom and I were just talking about this the other day, like communication was so different. Like, I feel like every activity that my kids are involved in, I get like 10 notifications about different things all the time. My mom was like, I remember when you guys used to come home at the end of a week with like a crumpled up like newsletter in your backpack. And like, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we weren't getting emails. We weren't getting texts. We weren't getting all these things. And I'm like, I do think that when I think about like joking about, you know, moving to the woods or going off grid, like it's not so much that I wouldn't want anyone to be involved. It's just like all the noise that it goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like sometimes is super overwhelming. And sometimes I'm just like, you know what? Pause, but then everyone's like, you didn't do the makeup right or whatever. And I'm like, oh no, it's because I didn't like check all the 17 notifications from last Wednesday or something.
And it's the immediate, like you have to, my daughter who we're starting to navigate cell phones with is like, Mom, I have to text her back right now. I'm like, no, you actually don't. I try not to be on my phone all the time, but there's so much to keep up with. So like navigating that with our kids is tricky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I will say one of the other beauties about all these activities and things and, you know, volunteering at the school when you can that I didn't anticipate about being a mom is like, you get to watch all these other kids grow up too.
Exactly.
And it's so special to be able to like watch all these people develop, even the ones that aren't yours. Yeah.
And I grew up moving a lot. And so I never got to see the same people grow up from kindergarten to, you know, if we stay in Hamilton, like graduating from high school.
Totally.
And I've been able to do that with so many kids in their schools. And it's just amazing to see, like, wow, I remember when you were in first grade and now you're in fifth grade. And, you know, so that's super cool. And I do really think it's been neat to maybe sometimes be that parent or that parental influence that they might not get at home and to get that extra reading. So for me, that's really fulfilling.
Yeah,
and and my kids really like me being able to be there, and I like it too.
Yeah. So. And you get to form these little relationships where, you know, it's like when I go to pick my kids up at school, like I know everyone's name.
Yes.
And that like means so much to me, you know, and to just get to say hi to like these kids that I don't know them super well, but I know them well enough to care a lot about them, and that feels special.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay, so that's modern day.
That's modern day, yep.
And then we're gonna rewind.
Okay.
And I know your story fairly well, and I feel like really blessed to know all the different parts and to meet you today as you are, knowing everything that you've been through. But I know you're familiar with kind of telling the full story of what happened in the beginning of your mothering journey.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I'm just going to, like, you know, quote unquote, pass the mic to you.
Okay.
And just have you kind of share with listeners, you know, what happened.
Yeah. So I'll start with Micah and just be brief. My husband was in residency when he was born, and we were in Minnesota, again, far away from family, but I had always wanted to be a mom. And so once I got past the, like, what am I doing phase, I really enjoyed it. Although looking back, I had a little postpartum depression in my last trimester.
Mm-hmm.
But with him, once I could exercise again, it kind of went away.
Mm.
He was born in April, so the weather was getting nicer. And so once we got out, I was feeling good. And he was our first, so I spent every moment with him thinking I needed to entertain him.
Mm-hmm.
And also just wanting to see what he did. So he was pretty used to having attention.
Yes.
Which is pretty typical of an oldest child.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a horrible sleeper. By the time I was pregnant with Addie and then about to deliver, I was so sleep deprived.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an important piece of my story.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Micah and Addie are 21 months apart, which to me seemed like enough time. And then looking back, it was pretty close, but not as close as other people that I know. So just the not sleeping. And she was born in January, which I've struggled with depression since probably since high school.
Mm-hmm.
But having a baby in the middle of the winter was probably not the best for me. Not that you can particularly plan that.
Yeah.
And so I had Addie, everything went smoothly with the delivery, no complications. My deliveries were pretty quick and easy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my mom came to help me with both of the kids. So I had support. Ben was around as much as he could. He didn't get like a paternity leave because he just kind of went with the schedule, but he was able to be there for the birth and afterwards. And so my mom left about 2 weeks after Addie was born, and then it was kind of like, here I go, I'm on my own. And
I remember that moment so well.
Yeah. And it's a lot to go from one to two because you're just trying to balance everything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I gave all this attention to Micah and now I'm split, and he's trying to figure out how to share this time. And I remember he came to the hospital and to meet his sister. He looked at her for 1 minute and he's like, where are the snacks?
So he was
pretty young and didn't quite understand.
He's like, whatever.
About 4 weeks, it probably started right away.
Yeah.
But it just kind of caught up to me. I wasn't sleeping.
Yeah. I want to pick apart the not sleeping thing a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I think people have different ideas of what it means to be sleep deprived. Not that that's ever good to any degree.
Right.
But
right.
Let's talk about it, because I imagine that with your husband's schedule too, like, he was probably sleep deprived from working.
Yeah.
So then, like, how did that all look?
So because I am a stay-at-home mom, mm-hmm. and he's had to be so on when he's working. I kind of took care of everything overnight.
Right.
Because he needed to sleep, and I would take care. And I'm nursing. I was nursing. So he kind of thought, well, I can't, feed the baby. Yeah. So I was getting up a lot. Well, with Micah got up all the time because he needed to eat. Addie slept way better, but I kept waking up like, why are you not awake?
Yeah.
Your brother was like, what, why are you not awake? And then for me, I just couldn't, like, I feared sleep. I was starting to get into almost a delusional state where I was afraid to go to sleep because I was having nightmares at night. So this came up gradually, but then I didn't want to tell Ben what was happening because I was on the border of kind of losing touch with reality.
Yeah.
And I thought, goodness, if I tell him what's going on, he's going to say you can't be around the kids, or they'll take them from me, because I was starting to realize, like, wait a second, this is not okay. This is not normal. But I couldn't really talk about it. And so I finally kind of told Ben what was going on, and I'm trying to like remember exactly when that was, but he, having his medical training, kind of started picking up on some things, and I had a panic attack one night, and I had put Micah in his crib and wanted him to be safe, and I kind of felt like I was dying, so I like strapped Addie on and just had this attack, and I called 911, and Ben saw our address on the call.
Whoa.
And was able to get into the ambulance and come to our house. And that was really kind of the wake up call.
Oh, that gives me shivers.
Like, it was really interesting because I'd been like great the day before, and then all of a sudden it just hit. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what's interesting with psychosis is you can have good days, and then you can have really bad days, and you can come from being in touch with reality to all of a sudden not. And so that was kind of that was like the wake up call for him. Like, this is not good. Actually, interestingly, before I had put the kids in a safe place, I had called my mother-in-law, and she kind of picked up on the fact that I was not doing well, and she was on her way. Mm-hmm. So I had help coming, but it was like, nobody was there.
Yeah.
And so I made that 911 call, and then Ben came, and that was the comfort that I needed. So by the time my mother-in-law got to my house, I was already starting to hear things a little bit, and I was just super spacey. And so I remember her saying, like, there's milk cups that are going bad. I was just starting to not be able to take care of the things that I needed to.
Yeah.
And so she kind of swooped in and helped, but I was really convinced that something was wrong with Micah, and I was starting to have absolute hallucinations and kind of see him as, I thought he was turning into like a demon. So getting really spiritually dark, or just not just spiritually, but like starting to see demons and feel like the devil was coming in at night. Those were the nightmares that I was having. And so I couldn't sleep. And if you don't sleep, then your mental state goes down. And so this was not like, I just had a baby sleep deprivation. This was probably, like a year of not sleeping. And I also had been diagnosed with seasonal affective disorder and had been on depression medication until we started to have kids. So then it had been 2 years since I'd really been on any kind of antidepressant. And so that was probably, looking back, should have done something differently, but we didn't know. So that was, like another piece of it.
Was that a decision that you made, or were you encouraged to?
Yeah. Nope, it was completely mine.
I did the same thing with my first two.
I didn't know enough about nursing and being on meds.
Same.
And so that was completely, my husband didn't pressure me. Nobody did. That was something that I decided to do. Yeah. And looking back, it was not the right decision, but sometimes you just don't know until you go through it.
Well, and you just think, I've spoken about this before, but I really thought, this is the beginning of me putting my baby first.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand that putting me last was actually not good for my baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no matter what they tell me about it being safe for breastfeeding, like, you know, there's all those things about like, well, they haven't done enough long-term studies, mm-hmm. and who knows this and who knows yeah. that. And so I was like, I'll just play it safe. But then I figured out like, oh, that playing it safe wasn't actually
right.
safe.
And so that was, you know, a piece, but then I had help and started to, not that it, to trust others to take care of my baby, because yeah. I was so afraid I was going to do something
yeah.
to them
yeah.
or to myself, because I was becoming psychotic. And I never had like a plan, but I had all these potentials of things that could go wrong. And so my mother-in-law came, and then, you know, Ben was doing his best balancing work and taking care of me. But we went on a run. I don't even remember how many weeks later. It was a couple weeks, and I stopped and I said, I have to go home right now. And he's like, well, what, like, why would you say that? And I looked at him and just kind of like unfeelingly mm-hmm. said, I'm going to go home and kill the kids, and I need to say goodbye. And it's so hard to say yeah. that looking back, because yeah. I just can't. I mean, I didn't feel that way as a mom,
of course,
at
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
But I was not in touch with reality, and I just, it happened. And so at that point, my husband realized, like, we got to separate you from the kids. It's yeah. either too stimulating, or you're just like so unbalanced that you need to be removed yeah. from their presence.
Yeah.
And so he took me up to Missoula to St. Mm-hmm. Patrick's Hospital and into the ER. And I was just so out of touch, but scared that I was going to be hospitalized and then I would never get better.
Yeah.
So that was a really fearful thing. Mm-hmm. And I was living in fear anyways, because of these voices and delusions and just everything that was going on. So that was super scary to mm-hmm. me, to realize like I might be by myself without yeah. my babies.
Right.
And I don't know how long I'm going to feel this way. So thankfully it worked out that there wasn't a bed in the hospital. And so we were able to work out a plan. I think at that point, sorry, my mom came at that point. And between my mother-in-law, my mom, Ben, we made a plan for me to be able to be at home. But it was such a weird mm-hmm. circumstance, because I got medicated and so got on some antipsychotics, and the delusions and the hallucination and the sleep piece started to set in. So it was kind of over the hump, but coming back down. And it was this like, what, I don't want to do anything. Can I hold her?
Yeah.
Can I change her diaper?
Yeah.
I just didn't want to do anything. I didn't trust myself
yeah.
anymore. And yeah. so that was such a scary thing. They'd actually, my mom and mother-in-law and husband put away all the knives and the scissors, just kind of preventing any harm. So, and I didn't know that at the time, but mm-hmm. I think back to that, like, gosh, you know, yeah. there were so many ways that things could have gone wrong.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I had a lot of, we shared a little bit with outside, you know, people outside, but not a ton.
Mm-hmm.
Ben was pretty new to the hospital, and he was just trying to be careful about how much he shared. And I didn't want to be this doctor's wife that went crazy and like feel that way forever.
Right,
and he was
totally.
Trying to respect that
yeah.
too. So we kept it pretty
yeah.
close, but
mm-hmm.
we did, you know, share that I was having a really difficult time after having Addie. And so our family was praying and mm-hmm. encouraging and just kind of taking care of me in that way. So we got past that pinnacle and started feeling out like, mm-hmm. how do we do this? One of the biggest pieces for me was once I got on those antipsychotics, I really didn't want to nurse anymore.
Yeah.
And so that was like the hardest yeah. decision I made, because I'd breastfed Micah for a year and just really wanted that
yeah.
with Addie.
Yeah.
So that was probably the hardest decision that mm-hmm. I had to make, because I was afraid of, you know, And looking back, I think, you know, it would have been fine either way. Mm-hmm. But for me, I felt like, gosh, she's going to get sick and we're not going to have that bond. And I already was feeling like we weren't having that bonding time anyway. And so letting go of that piece was really hard. But then as soon as I made that decision that I wasn't going to breastfeed anymore, my milk supply was really down anyways because of everything that was going
on.
And she was actually not gaining weight great because she wasn't getting enough. And so I made that decision. I didn't pump her anything. I just cold turkey. It was actually, she went from breast to bottle when I went up to the hospital, and she thankfully took her bottle right away. It was amazing. And so I let go of that piece, and then I slept and she got what she needed. And
how old was she when you needed to go to Missoula?
She was about 6 weeks old.
Okay.
Yeah. So pretty young. And so that was super hard.
Yeah.
Super hard for me, but I was able to sleep. And that, again, was a healing piece because of the sleep deprivation and just allowing someone else to be able to take care of them.
Yeah.
But again, it was just that weird, like, and another piece too, which I had kind of forgotten about. She had an ulcerated hemangioma on her bottom, and that was feeding into my nightmares because here, like, my precious baby had something physically wrong with her, and we had to take care of that. So it was just already like.
And what is that? I'm not familiar.
I'm sorry. No. It's like a birthmark that kind of can be anywhere on your body, but it's like progresses, and hers just had an open sore. So she had like an open sore on her bottom. Okay. And it was awful because she only cried when we had to take care of it. So I'm thinking, gosh, I'm, you know, like I'm already have done some, not done some things, but said some things that were really awful. And now we have to take care of her in this way. And so that was, looking back on my story, I think like there were just so many things that came together all at the same time. And so anyway, like she was safe. I was safe. Micah was safe. And my mom was just amazing and balancing it all and taking care of me. And Ben too, kind of helping me through it. I just kept asking, how long am I going to feel this way? When am I going to get better? And they didn't have the answers. They said, I don't know. We just don't know. And I'm a runner. And so I'm like, can you just give me the finish line? Just tell me how many more days it's going to take. And I can persist through it. But they didn't have those. They didn't have those answers. And I remember one day just like staying with my mom and in her bed, just crying like, this is so awful. Like, why are we going through this? And how long is it going to take? And my husband was just so amazing. And my mom was just so amazing. Like, we're going to get through this. It's going to be okay. It doesn't feel like it now, but it ended up being okay.
Yeah.
So
when the people that you love and trust the most really say that to you.
Yeah.
And you know that they're going to be there until it does.
Right.
There's so much
relief. It was just amazing that my mom was able to put her life on hold and come and take care of me. And she tells me, she's like, Rachel, I wouldn't want to do anything else.
Yeah. Of course.
But she, you know, was able, she wasn't working outside the home either. So it just worked out really great that she was able to come and take care of me. And, you know, my dad was super understanding. Mm-hmm. And so I got back to normal really quickly. It took about 2 months for me to kind of balance out and feel like I was confident enough. Driving was a really big fear that I had because when the psychosis was starting, I could envision myself like driving somewhere and something either happening or purposely doing something and crashing the car. And so that was kind of like my last big marker of when I was doing better was if I could confidently drive the car. So I remember my mom and I driving up to, I was going to mothers of preschoolers at the time. And I obviously had taken a huge break through all this, but we were like, we're going to go to MOPS today and I'm going to drive with you. And because by this time she was like, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. You're doing good. But I just needed to come to that point where I trusted myself.
I think I'd feel the same
to
way.
Do that. Yeah. And so once I kind of was able to drive and I slowly started getting back into taking care of the kids and doing all the things that I would need to do when I was on my own again. So that, about 2 months of sleep and medicine and support from my husband and my mom, I was back to myself, which is really amazing. And I'm just so thankful because as I've learned after this experience, some women never get there. And so I'm just really thankful that I had the knowledge and the family support. And I guess one other piece too is my husband was in the medical field. And so he identified what was going on fairly early and he knew where to go and what to do. And he helped with medications and finding the right thing. So that's a piece of my story that I'm just, that's unique.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still felt pretty alone. Like this never happens to anyone. I remember like a psychology class in college and I had heard of Andrea Yates and
I think that's what we all think of. Like people our age, that's what I always go to just because of what the media did with that story.
Yeah. So I felt pretty isolated, like this, I'm the only one that has gone through this, which is absolutely not true.
Yeah.
But at the time, it really felt like I was like the only person that this had happened to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it is a pretty extreme.
It is. And she was really portrayed as an absolute monster.
Yes. Like,
you know, and I think there was just very little education that went along with that story. And maybe because there was less information available at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I, you know, I'm curious about so many pieces, but what was it like for Micah at that time?
So he was gone quite a bit. My in-laws here in Helena thought it would be good for him to just have not be there.
Oh, okay.
One less person to take care of. And he
was so helpful.
He was 2 by that point. Uh-huh. So he was starting to pick up on mom's not doing well.
Yeah.
And so he came to Helena, which ended up being really hard for me because I was so worried something was going to happen to one of my kids. And then I didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
And so I would check in with him and do that kind of thing. But it was definitely the right decision for him not to be there. Yeah. But it was also hard for me to not know where he was.
What a tough thing to be consumed with fear and worry like that.
And
need to have eyes on your kiddos to make sure. But then also knowing that there's like less safety if you do. That must have just been so
hard. It was really hard. Yeah. And I just had like this fear of water with him and it was summertime and they were going out on the boat quite a bit just to kind of give him something
of
to
course,
do.
Right.
And it just kind of, and it probably wouldn't have mattered what they did. I would have found a way to be afraid of what was going on with him. But so he was not there. It was really just my mom and I and Addie because it was a full-time job kind of taking care of me.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I just was trying to figure out, like, how, like, that just would have been even more, that layer seemed so intense to me to be trying to recover, and you still have a toddler who, like, really, really needs you.
Yeah.
And I had a similar, like, you know, I think with most of us, our first babies are used to having us, like, be very engaged and active, and all of our attention goes to them, and so it's already a drastic change when sibling comes along, and then with this piece going on too. I just imagine it would be so
I just look back on my story and I had so much support. Like it's just, I'm so thankful.
Yeah.
Thankful for that. And and people just dropped their lives to prioritize me. And it was super hard on my husband to try to go to work and save people's lives and be preoccupied with what was going on with me. So that was super hard for our marriage and it was hard. You know, I remember him kind of asking me as he was trying to arrange medical care or medications. He's like, I'm going to have to talk to you. I have to talk about you like you're my patient.
Yeah.
And that piece has been really hard to find that balance between being my doctor and my husband. Yeah. And now that there's been more time and space, I'm just so thankful for him and his knowledge. At first, it was like, I just want you to be my husband. Yeah. Like, I don't want you to be my doctor. But I would not have recovered in the same way if he hadn't been able to have that knowledge and
take
care of me in that way.
And he probably was like, I just want you to be my wife and not my patient. It was probably for both of you,
That
back and forth.
That's still part of it.
But, I mean, so fortunate that you did have each other.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And I think even just regardless of psychosis, just having depression is challenging on a marriage. And
sure.
He had not had experience with individuals in his life that had been depressed, and he'd really helped me kind of start dealing with that. But then we had this child, and he was concerned of not only taking care of me, but protecting his family and what's the best decision. And I'm sure there were times where he thought, gosh, you know, can I trust her to be the caregiver of my kids?
Right.
And, but that was super stressful too, yeah. On like this, I need you to be here and be my rock. And yet you're dealing with all of these things and all of these questions that we don't have answers for. Mm-hmm. So we kind of just had to take it one day at a time. And we're still not recovering, but I think we kind of wish, gosh, I wish that this wasn't a piece of our story, yeah. But it is.
Yeah.
And with anything in a marriage, you have to kind of learn how to understand each other. And so we're doing much better, yeah. But it was really hard, yeah. On our marriage too.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that you have said that your faith has played a huge part in your, mm-hmm. healing. And so in terms of you guys healing your relationship and getting to a space where you really needed to do that, do you want to talk about that a little
bit?
Yeah.
So I think communication was really big. So that's been a piece of our healing. But for me, it was really interesting because my faith is a huge part of my life. And in psychosis, interestingly, a lot of people have, even that maybe don't have a faith base or kind, yeah. of consider themselves to be religious, have these black and white experiences,
right.
Fear, love, or
yeah,
Satan's there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's part of what I'm so curious about, because I know it's been helpful, but I know that is,
yeah,
a recurring thing for folks too, is these kind of like religious ideology based, mm-hmm. hallucinations,
yes.
and things. And
yes.
So I'm so curious what you've learned in like reconciling those,
yeah.
pieces.
So with Addie, it was all the fear and the dark and the satanic and the demonic. And unpacking my story, I had some religious baggage from previous experiences,
mm-hmm.
that all kind of came up
totally
during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a lot.
That is a lot.
But at the same time, I had that assurance that God was not going to leave me,
mm-hmm.
that people were praying and supporting me and just encouraging me. And I did cling to promises that I knew. But then it was this interesting balance, because some of them made me more afraid,
yeah.
and some of them kind of sent me over the edge,
yeah.
of going towards the, like, I just want to go to heaven, or
yeah.
I just want to,
yeah.
like, not that I ever wanted to take my life to get there, but
yeah.
it was just like, it was this weird dynamic between,
mm-hmm.
coming from fear and moving towards trusting the Lord, but not wanting to get too far the other direction where then I might. So yeah, it was really a balance,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of identifying how I was doing day to day, what I needed.
Yeah.
But just knowing people were supporting, they were bringing meals and they were praying, and
right.
that was super helpful. I remember, you know, just being newer to Hamilton, I hadn't established my,
mm-hmm.
my support group there. My support group, I guess I would say, was back in Minnesota. And so it was this weird time of, we can't really, again, say too much or go into too many details, but we also need,
yeah.
people to know something's,
yeah.
going on. And so I just remember sometimes even like people from our church bringing meals, and I was like, what do I tell them?
Yeah.
And my mom and my husband were just like, we don't need to say anything. We just say thank you.
Yep.
So yeah, that piece of it was, you know, looking back, just, it's just interesting how that works.
Yeah. I mean, I've not having gone through this myself, I don't fully understand, but it makes sense to me that whatever your experience in life has been leading up to a psychotic break,
yeah.
like your brain is going to call upon the information and the thoughts that you've had in the past and then just sort of twist them, right?
And I think for me, I would even go so far as saying kind of some religious trauma.
Yeah.
And I've learned with psychosis a lot, and even just with birthing, stuff from your past, whether it was trauma or not, kind of comes up with hormones,
yep.
balancing.
Yep.
And so that was I didn't deal with that all right when I was psychotic, but mm-hmm. have learned since,
yeah.
like have grown and changed some understandings, or even like through college, I kind of changed my understanding of love and faith and acceptance from God, but it just all crashed down again right after yeah. she was born.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. Everything intensifies. It's just like when you're giving birth or you're in labor and all your senses become heightened,
yes.
yeah. almost as like a protective factor mm-hmm. of like you're hyper aware of everyone and everything and every smell and every, you know, and then when you go home with baby, it's a milder version of
right.
that.
Right. And then for me, yeah. it continued.
Yeah.
It just, yeah, it was just totally off the other mm-hmm. end of like hypersensitivity.
Right.
And
yeah.
So, yeah. And it's designed to be that way, yeah. right? We're supposed to be
right.
this caregiver of this new life. But if things get off uh-huh. to the course that they were for me,
yeah.
then it's just too yeah. much. I know.
When you first started to get like full nights of quality sleep,
mm-hmm.
do you remember how different it felt like when you woke up?
Yes, I do remember also like it was hard to sleep during the day because mm-hmm. I was trying to catch up.
Yeah.
And so my mom and husband said like, well, if you can't fall asleep right away, then don't try.
Yeah.
But I do and I don't. I think I just felt a weight lifted as I started to feel more myself. And so as I started to get that sleep and healing, then I could do more mm-hmm. without fear
yeah.
that something was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I kind of like describe psychosis as this mountain. You're kind of starting to realize things are off. Then you go up the steep hill of losing touch. And then that crisis moment where I was removed from the kids is kind of the pinnacle. And then you come back down. So then you lose less and less touch with reality, and then you start to know.
Yeah, like it's not like all of a
I'm
sudden
okay.
you.
Yeah, but like I said earlier, in that slope, you can be okay 1 minute,
yeah.
and not okay the next. And as you know, you get kind of coming down the other side of the mountain, those become less and less.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just say it was like just not being left alone.
Yeah.
with them
yeah.
because you didn't quite know how it was going to feel, or the stress of like being on your own can kind of set you off.
Yeah.
But again, I was just so thankful to mm-hmm. have people that were around to help. And I was getting like, once I was getting sleep and regulated, balanced hormonally and
mm-hmm.
biochemically,
yeah,
it got easier to kind of yeah. assess that line.
Yeah. And let's focus on that for a second, because that's a piece of this. Like, I feel like I've heard a fair amount of people's lived experience of this, of psychosis, postpartum mm-hmm. psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine, being the person you are, you probably did some research about, like, the scientific
yeah.
component.
Maybe, like, way later, not in the middle.
Yeah,
I feel like my husband
sense.
Was doing that. I've always been a warrior by nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't learn that much because I just would have set myself off.
No, I mean more like
later.
Since
so
then.
Mine has been more, I met a woman named Melissa Bangs
mm-hmm.
and actually at MOPS, she spoke and she had a psychosis story
mm-hmm.
and like light bulbs just went off and like a relief of, my goodness, like there's a woman 40 miles away from me and her story actually happened about the same time
yeah.
as mine. And so it was just this relief of I'm not alone.
Yeah.
I'm not the only one. So I met her in the bathroom afterwards. I'm like, I am finding this woman before she leaves. Like, we have got to connect.
Oh my gosh. I can
and
just
so,
picture that moment.
Yeah,
that's like the
yeah.
perfect place to meet her.
Yes. Yes. So I met Melissa. And then she had a workshop that she was doing that I attended. And it just was so healing
yeah.
to interact with other moms that maybe didn't have psychosis, but that had other experiences. And learning from Melissa helped so much because hers was very similar.
Yeah.
Her story is very similar to
yeah.
mine. And so I just finally felt like, no, I'm not alone. And I started, because of Melissa and this workshop, kind of started learning more
mm-hmm.
about all kinds of perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. that's kind of where the learning piece came, mm-hmm. was through attending workshops or getting to share my story yeah. with others and learning from other people. And then, yes, I did do a little bit of mm-hmm. research. And it was, I'm trying to even remember how many. So I went to that workshop at about 8 months when Addie was about 8 months. And at the end of the workshop, she kind of said, would you like to share your story? And I'm like, sure. I don't know what that looks like, but yes, I will. And so we ended up, we being the moms at this workshop, ended up writing our stories and putting them on the stage, which was like, are you kidding me? Like if someone had told me 2 months after I had Addie that I would be sharing my story from the stage, I would have said no way.
Yeah.
But it was just such a supportive environment to process our lived experiences, whatever those looked like, mm-hmm. whether it was postpartum depression or whether it was conception difficulties or physical trauma after birth. It was super healing, but it was also a time where I really processed what had actually happened because I didn't quite remember. I think my brain had kind of blocked that out as a self-preservation piece. And
sense.
So it was great, but it was hard.
Yeah.
And we had conversations, Ben and I had conversations that were really healing and really hard for me to kind of realize, like, I thought I had said, I think I'm going to kill the kids. He's like, no, you actually said you were going to.
Mm-hmm.
And those were moments that were just really hard to deal with because, you know, I had said and done things that I don't remember. Yeah. My husband remembers everything.
Yeah.
So again, that's that trauma for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer we've been married and the further out we are from that experience, those things come up and we have learned to talk through them and deal with them and just maritally kind of trying to communicate and see each other's perspectives and understand and respect that. But yeah, I kind of just took this experience and through Melissa and sharing my story was able to heal because of sharing. And it gave a lot of purpose to what I went through. And I would share my story and Momity. And afterwards, people would come up and be like, now I understand.
Yeah.
And maybe it wasn't a psychosis story, but it was a depression story or an anxiety story or, you know, just thank you for sharing. Mm. And the more I heard that, it just gave a purpose to that horrible experience that I wouldn't wish on anybody, but I had to walk through that to be able to help some other women. And you don't, as you understand, you don't understand it unless you've been there and you can relate and empathize with someone in a completely different way. And so once I got to the point where I could share my story, because it took a lot of processing, then every time I did, it was just so healing. And setbacks too, like there's still, I still think back sometimes to what happened and I can't believe that I said or did those things. So there's moments, and there's the mom guilt sometimes too of like, oh, my kids had to go through that too. And, you know, Micah had to be separated and what does he remember? And through a lot of counseling, I've just come to understand like, this is our story. This is our family story.
Yeah.
And it can be used in a way to help others and to relate with other people and to teach my girls like how to get through something really hard and that they've been able to see that as they've gotten older and understand more of what happened or just that mom went through something really difficult and now she's okay.
Yeah.
She's functioning. She can take care of us. She's not only functioning, but thriving and being able to help someone else. And so I think that is just, again, gives up purpose to our experience. And, you know, I've been able to help so many women, which is amazing, from all over. So through Momity was based kind of in Missoula. And then I also had an opportunity to share my story in a TED Talk form. I had a friend that was on the committee and she says, and she had come and seen Momity. And so she says, Rachel, you have to apply for this. And I thought, okay, like, okay, now this is a different audience.
Totally.
This is not kind of moms that are coming or providers that are coming to hear this story. This is just everybody. And so that was even more nerve-wracking because they might have, you know, seen the title of my talk, but they had no idea what was coming. And so, and it was more of like an academic plus sharing my story piece. But I remember a friend of mine, a husband of one of my kids' teachers came up and was just like, thank you for sharing, because I had no idea. And so as hard as it was to like be that vulnerable in that setting again, it's just helped so many people. And that is on YouTube. And so
yeah, we'll put show notes.
It's been really good to help. I've gotten emails back from people all over just like, thank you for sharing. And you still get the like negative of, you know, why would you go on to have more children after this experience? Yeah. But kind of just let that blow off, because they just don't quite understand.
Yeah.
So I just hold on to those positives and those, like, because you're vulnerable, I can be more vulnerable.
Yep. Yeah.
So,
yeah. And in terms of like having our kids watch us go through such hard things and then find a way to find meaning and purpose and resilience in it.
Yeah.
Like that's such a beautiful thing to teach them and to lead by example in that. And, you know, it's like, what are our options? We can either completely avoid these things and pretend they didn't happen, which is not something I want to teach my kids to do, you know, or we can be really, really honest about it and say, hey, you guys are going to have really hard stuff too. Like, here are your options. You know, I can tell you that I've done this one and it doesn't feel so good and it eventually catches up with you.
Yeah.
Or you can do this one.
I think I always saw my parents as perfect.
Yeah.
And
I didn't, but I'm happy for you.
I must just have a really bad memory. Or like my mom said, like, but I have just learned, like, if we want them to forgive others or if we want them to try something hard, we have to model that too.
Yep.
And I've had the opportunity to show some pretty hard things that, that we've all gotten through.
Yeah.
And so,
Yeah. And do you want to talk about the other piece?
Yeah,
too?
I can. Yeah. So we had Addie and I recovered, and Ben was kind of like, absolutely no more kids. Like, I can't go through this again. But I just felt not fulfilled. Like, that was not my last postpartum experience that I had envisioned. I hadn't envisioned not getting to nurse. I hadn't envisioned being separated from the kids. And so I just really felt like we were supposed to have another child. And through a lot of prayer and conversation with my husband, we decided that I was doing well and that we could try. And so I got pregnant with Emma. And it was the first pregnancy that I felt connected to.
Yeah.
And interestingly, I was the most mentally healthy during that pregnancy. And it was like the pregnancy I didn't think I was going to get to have.
Yeah.
It was a gift.
Yeah.
And so I just relished that. And I enjoyed the kicks and just everything, not everything about it, because I was still parenting two other kids. So, but it was just different.
Yeah.
I felt really connected. And she was born and nothing happened. Like, it was that picture perfect postpartum that doesn't exist. It was just really amazing that I was doing well and we didn't have any complications that time. So then I thought, okay.
But you also, I imagine you also, part of that could be that you guys had a plan in place, probably, and you were ready.
And watching, and we didn't have to put any of that into place, because for this pregnancy, this delivery, this postpartum time, those things didn't come up. She was born in the summer. I was on medication. Yep. I'd been sleeping better. Yeah. So all those pieces.
Yeah.
So we kind of thought, okay, that's done. That chapter's closed.
Yeah.
We're going to move on. That was a piece of our story, but it doesn't have to be part of our future. Well, then we had Chloe, and it was about 4 weeks. We came to Helena actually to show her off and introduce her to our family. And kind of while we were in Helena, I started just like talking all the time, making plans. I actually had a really bad headache. So I was starting to show signs again that things were off. And my husband identified that right away. And I kind of identified it and started sharing, like, okay, here's what's going on. I can't believe we're going through this again. But I, again, stopped, didn't completely stop breastfeeding, but I stopped breastfeeding and started pumping because I was going to get back to it. Like once I kind of had this, you know, okay, here we go again. And I don't like that we're going through this, but I can get through this even more so, and kind of had a timeline and we knew kind of what to do. So I did start pumping right away, and my mom came out again and helped take care of things. But by this time, there's four kids to take care of. And this experience was really interesting because it wasn't the dark, deep fear side, but it was more the love and light and a lot about heaven. So I've gotten to experience both sides. Which is...
That's really interesting.
So my mom was with me, Ben was at work, and I had been doing okay, kind of having the same feelings of like something is going to happen. I had really was like really convinced something was going to happen to that dealt with the neck, like a drowning, or I saw, you know, Micah getting something wrapped around his neck underwater, and I saw myself hanging from a tree. It was just very, that just seemed to be what I was preoccupied with. And then my mom and I went for a walk down our driveway, and we came back and a turkey had flown into our garage door and broken its neck. And like my worst fears of something happening with the neck had been actualized, and I snapped again. That was my crisis moment. And so I ran into the house and in a manic state at this point, put my hand through a picture frame in our bedroom. And then I ran down the stairs with blood on my shoes from my hand. And I reached out to Addie and I said, I'm going to take you to heaven with me. And then I ran back upstairs and I tried to jump through our second story window. And my mom was able to keep me from doing that. And
Addie was how old?
Addie was four.
Okay.
And Emma was two.
Uh-huh.
And so, again, at that moment, it was no longer safe for me. It wasn't safe for me to be around the kids, and it was time for me to be completely removed. And this time, the only bed that was available was actually here in Helena at St. Pete's. And that was, it was time for that to happen. Yeah. And again, just too many people for my husband and my mom and my mother-in-law to take care of. And so I was admitted to the psych ward, and I was still afraid of being hospitalized, and I was still afraid that other people were going to set me off, and I was afraid of being separated from my baby. But they were amazing at the hospital. And again, I had my husband who was advocating for me, and he knew what to say and what to do. So I was put on the psych ward. That night there was an earthquake in Helena.
I forgot about this part of your story.
And so
I remember that earthquake.
It
was so wild.
And this happened with both psychoses. I felt like I could affect everything around me.
Oh yeah.
And
that's
then
really common.
Yes. I was hearing messages from the radio or reading things and feeling like a higher power was telling me what to do, or I had that power to affect other things. And then this earthquake happens, and Ben was like, he told me later, he's like, this is not helping Rachel heal right now. And so it gave us something to talk about the next day on the psych ward. Like, did that really happen? You know, like,
of all the places to be checking in about. Well, because even, you know, on the outside, we're all like, was that, what just happened?
Right.
It's so extraordinary in Montana to be able to feel an earthquake like that.
So that's a comedic piece to my story that didn't help. But I look back and the nurses were just like, I told them, I said, I want to eventually breastfeed my child again. So I would pump, but I couldn't have a pump in the hospital because I was still having plans or thoughts of harming myself. I didn't have like a direct plan, but it was a potential suicide risk. Mm-hmm. And so I would have to ask the nurses to get the pump out, and mm-hmm. then they would monitor me mm-hmm. while I was pumping. But I think
because of the hoses, I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
That could be used mm-hmm. to,
yeah. Gotcha.
Hang my, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So, but they were super understanding, and they told us afterwards, like, we've never treated someone with postpartum psychosis. You're the first one. But even not having treated someone, they were really understanding of my goals. And when I was deemed safe enough to be around the kids, they actually got to bring Chloe to the hospital, and I had supervised visits. And I think my situation was different than other individuals on the psych ward because I had so much support, and I got to see my family, and I had a motivation to get better. And I thought, okay, I'm here for a purpose, and I'm going to recover and get better. So I was there for about 5 days mm-hmm. and then I was discharged. I remember that first day, my in-laws actually gave Ben and I a hotel room to kind of just have some time together. And I looked at Chloe and I didn't know what to do. Like, yeah. I don't know your cries. I don't know if you're hungry. So that was a really weird feeling of like having been detached from my baby and feeling like other people had taken care of her. And this is my child, but I don't know the signs yet. So that was hard. Another funny story. We had gone out to dinner and I'd actually used a dress for my mother-in-law, because when I was packing to go to the hospital, I remember standing in the closet looking at my clothes like, what do I bring? Like, what? How am I going? What do I bring? So I hadn't brought anything that was nursing friendly. And so we actually had to change in the bathroom so that I could nurse my child. So that was kind of funny. Like, I had to go into the bathroom, change clothes, and make it possible for it. But even like, it was a relearning connection with her, and it took a little while.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like I went from being in the hospital to being on my own again mm-hmm. with her, but it was that learning process again of reconnecting. But by this point, you know, Micah was 6, Addie was 4, and Emma was 2. And so I had, again, a ton of guilt of what I had done to Addie.
I'm sure.
And if I had mentally scarred her for life. So that was something that I had to really process afterwards. And, you know, I'm sure my mom explained something that she could understand, but I mean, what do you say?
Yeah.
And so I don't remember how long it was, but I remember walking again down our driveway with Addie, and I kind of said, Mom, you know, why did you get sick, or what happened, or why did you leave? And I thought, gosh, what do I say? Mm-hmm. And I just tried my, and I don't exactly remember what my response was, but I just said, well, Mommy's brain wasn't working and I love you more than anything.
Yeah.
And I would never purposely try to hurt you, but you know, I just wasn't myself.
Yeah.
And that's been something that I don't feel guilty anymore, because I've been able to, through a lot of counseling and just time, realize like, this again is a piece of our history. This is our family story. And the more that I've learned about psychosis, it happens about 50% of the time, 50% of pregnancies, but it's also hereditary. So there's a huge chance that I could walk through this with my girls.
Yeah.
Whether it's psychosis or something, you know, but I do think about that. Like, I really hope and pray they never get to that point. But if they do, they'll know I'm there for them, and I'll be again able to relate and advocate for them in a different way. Because that's what I've noticed a lot between when I had Addie and when I had Chloe, just the awareness in the medical field and the screening and the identification. Like, I should have been screened.
Yeah.
I had a history of depression. I have family history of bipolar and schizophrenia. And so they should have been watching me, but they didn't know.
Yeah.
And so I've kind of taken it upon myself to become an advocate for myself and for others, and educating both providers and new moms about that, because it's definitely in the back of my mind for my girls. But another interesting moment that I had with Micah, we were driving back from the Oregon coast, and I was about to perform Mamadi when we got home. And so I'd taken my script with me and was like practicing. And actually I'd given him some paper to color on, and Mike is a very inquisitive young man. And so he at 4 years old or 6 years old turned it over and started reading my piece. And I'm driving, and all of a sudden I hear the line, and of all the things that he read the "I'm going to kill my child" line. And you know, I about had to stop the car because I was just like, what just happened? And again, that's been a piece to explain to him more, or him at the time, six-year-old Micah, like mommy's brain wasn't working, and I love you, and I would never do anything to harm you. And, you know, I've had some setbacks. Like, I'm doing really well now, but even just this winter, I had a little blip and kind of felt like I was getting manic again. And part of it is like PTSD. So Mommy starts playing through my head, and then I start thinking, gosh, am I back there yet? And so I'm thriving, but I'm not perfect. And I've actually been diagnosed with bipolar disorder since in between the two. No, it's been since Chloe. I fought it for a long time. Here I'm this advocate for women, and sharing your story and being open and breaking stigma. And I had a really hard time swallowing that diagnosis. And I have learned, kind of, every winters are just hard for me. And the reason that the diagnosis came was I actually had a manic episode in the summer, and I had a manic episode outside of postpartum. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
And most days I'm okay with it. I have an aunt that is bipolar, and she's had a struggle in her life. And so I start to think, gosh, is that going to be me kind of thing? And I think my husband in his line of work sees a lot of individuals that have mental health challenges, and he can't help but lump me into that sometimes. Yeah. And again, it was that piece that we were talking about earlier of like, neither of us expected this to be our stories or our lives, but it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a condition in the brain, I don't even like to call it a disease. Yeah. I mean, it's a condition, it's biochemical. It's a real thing. The brain's an organ, and it's just as it would be as if I had cancer, you know, like we'd walk through that together. And so we're walking through having a bipolar diagnosis and having been through psychosis twice, but he's just super faithful. And some days, just as with any relationship, not as encouraging as others, but he's stuck by my side and he has made really hard decisions of whether I'm safe to be around the children. And so I'm just super, super thankful and grateful to him for standing by my side and continuing to walk through our lives together and our kids' lives together. And I'm tearing up because it hasn't been that long since my last little blip. And so I'm a work in progress, and I learn something every time of kind of how I can prevent things. But, you know, as you know, subclinical depression is really hard to identify. And when I go through something in the winter, I'm like, darn it, why am I here again? Yeah. How did I not catch this? Yep. And then it is kind of the PTSD of like getting over anxious that something's going to go awry, which actually probably ramps me up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But I have people that I can trust, my husband and my mom and my best friends that have walked through my experiences with me and are really good sounding boards of like, Rachel, are you doing too much? How are you doing? Like, how are you really doing? And I think that that's a huge piece just with psychosis in general, or sometimes I wonder how much information to give to a new mom.
Yep.
Because I don't want to worry them or scare them, but I also don't want them to feel isolated when they find themselves in that kind of a position. And I actually started perinatal support group, and then we changed it to a motherhood group because we didn't want there to be like a stigma surrounding a support group. But I've had the opportunity to share at birthing classes and just kind of give people a heads up of like, things are not always butterflies and roses.
Yeah.
Actually, most of the time they're not.
Yeah.
And if you find yourself in a situation where things aren't right, come talk to me. I've been there. I understand.
Yeah.
And you know, having a connection to the medical community, I've had the opportunity to, through my OB and others, not only do they just theoretically know, but they know a person and they know a patient. And I was featured in our local newspaper. And so my story's out there now. And interestingly, the support that we got from the hospital with Chloe, because we shared our story more, was just nothing but we're here if you need anything. Like if you ever need anything, like being a mom is hard. Whether you're a mom to one kid or you're a mom to six kids, like there's just days where it's hard. And so I've gotten that support from Ben's colleagues, from the individuals that we know. Like the more I share, the more it helps. And I sometimes take advantage of that and sometimes don't. But I really learned that I had to lose myself to find myself again and to be able to accept that help, that we can't do this on our own. We can't do this mothering journey on our own. We're not supposed to. That we need friends and family and moments to go for a walk when it's just been a really hard day. And so that's kind of my story, my journey. And
And as much as you talk about, like, you know, being so grateful for the support of your husband, I also just, like, gentle reminder that having people in our lives who've gone through these kinds of things is also a huge blessing. Because, you know, my closest friends, I know they understand, and I love them so dearly because I can and will call them when I'm not okay. And I'm so, so grateful that I know people who've been through really, really hard things. There's a depth of character there, and there's like a hope that exists within someone who's been through these kinds of experiences that just isn't possible for people who haven't. And that's okay. Like, I'm not saying everyone should go through hard things, but you know, like sometimes I think we forget what we can bring to a relationship or bring to like our partners or as a mom. Like, it's easy to like count our blessings on behalf of the people who have been there for us. But I sometimes, my friends and my loved ones have to remind me, like, Claire, I don't know what I would do without you, because you are able to receive me just as I am always. You're not afraid to talk about scary things. You're not like, you know, and I just think that sometimes we forget that.
And I've heard from so many people, from my mom, from my best friends, like, you are so strong. And I felt so weak. I felt so weak. And like, why did I do this? Or why did this happen to me? And like, I just wanted to fix it. Like, I just wanted to fix it or forget about it. And yet I just remember that you are so strong. And like, I'm so proud of you. And like, we've talked about like showing that strength for our kids and for others. Like, it is a blessing. It is something that felt like walking through hell that has turned into the biggest blessing I could imagine. It's funny to say that, the biggest blessing I can imagine. Like, psychosis is the biggest blessing I can imagine, but it's just that being able to affect so many other lives. And thankfully, you know, I walked through it with unscathed. Some stories don't turn out like mine. And there's moments where I think, gosh, how did we get so blessed? How did we make it through that? And why did I get to make it through and some others don't? But I have to just hold on to the, like, you continue to live your life to affect other people in a positive way. And I've done a lot of work to heal and find my balance and, so there's that piece. And I've just been very blessed. I've learned a lot, and I have a lot of knowledge that I want to share with other people that may find themselves in the same situation or a similar situation. Because I think I kind of call it the fourth trimester. Like there's so much that can happen. And I just want to share with women, like, you're not alone and you didn't do anything to bring this on yourself. Whether it's, again, any PMAD or any experience, like, you are still a good mother and you love your children. And sometimes biochemically you get off. And I've come across Postpartum Support International. I'm sure you've talked about them a lot. They've just been so helpful. And, and their motto is, you are not alone, that you, with help, you can get better. You are not alone. You're not to blame.
Yeah.
And with help, you can recover. And I just hold on to that because I think that's so true. Like, you didn't do anything to cause this. It's not your fault, but you can find the skills and find what you need to do for yourself to come out of that. And sometimes the story doesn't turn out great.
And because these are actual health conditions, they are actually treatable.
Right.
Like, I think that that's really easy to lose sight of, even though I work in this space every day.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you hear stories and hear stories. And I think that for me, there was so much trouble separating out, like, my self-blame and my failure, my, like, perception of failure as a mother, like, that I thought, well, I'm so broken, there's no possible way that I can be put back together.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that one of the things that I've learned, and I know you have too, that I still am so grateful that really, like, the amount of humility that it's brought into my life, where, like, I don't see anyone who's struggling as broken or a failure anymore. Like, no matter what, I know there's some story and some set of circumstances that have brought them to this point. And, like, I really try to teach my kids that, like, and I've really, you know, I really try to live in the world in a way that's like, we're not supposed to see each other as these failed people.
Right.
You know,
it does. You're right. Having had a challenging experience does give you a different way to see the world. I find myself being really careful about the word crazy.
Totally.
And I use it, you know, sometimes too. And then I'm trying to teach my kids to be more understanding of individuals that have different experiences too. And that is like a buzzword for me, because, like, you don't understand what it's like to be crazy.
Yeah.
And like you were just saying, like, there's always a reason. There's always something that's happened, whether it's trauma or circumstances that has led an individual to that point. And we're just called to love. That's the message I want to give to my kids is let's not be judgmental. Let's love others.
Yeah.
And I have a deeper understanding of how to love certain people because I've been there.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to be able to be that for our kids. Yeah. And some days I do a great job and some days I probably don't do as well as I should. But, and that's just interesting to phrase it that way, right? Like, we're not a failure when we fall.
Right.
We're human. We're
but
not going to have a perfect day.
I think with mental health and the healing journey of that, for me, it's when I have a hard day, like, I have to really resist the thought habit of, like, everything I've done up to this point didn't matter. Like, here I am again.
Yeah.
All the work I've done, all the counseling, all the, you know, like, therapeutic medicine that I've embraced and all of the different things that I've done, like, oh, it's all nothing now. It's all null and void. That's, like, my tendency. And I know it's not true.
Right.
But on our dark days, it's really hard for me to, like, remember, like, oh, this is, I am having a day. I'm having an episode. I will get through it. Things will get better. Yeah. Probably sooner than they have in the past. But, like, that is so hard.
It is so hard. Because I'm, even this winter was just like, seriously. Seriously, like, I did everything I could and yet I'm here again.
Yeah.
But next winter I'm going to have more plans and I've had really good providers and you have to make a plan as you go because circumstances are different. Like my life is busy and it's stressful.
Yeah.
So I have to take care of myself. Yeah. And, you know, I hadn't exercised a lot during mm-hmm. the winter. It's just kind of the nature of living in Montana. Yep. You just, it's same. Gray yep. and you don't want to go out, but I have to make that time for myself. And I'm still not good about that. I'm mm-hmm. still not good about feeding myself yeah. before my kids. I'm yeah. still not good about, you know, prioritizing exercise. Yeah. I'm like, oh, well, I'll go help at school yeah. or I'll do this or yeah. that. So mm-hmm. I'm yeah, work in progress still too, because yeah. I'm still like learning how to say no. Mm-hmm. And, you know, each phase is different. I'm entering the preteen, teenage phase and having an elementary school child. And it's, I haven't walked through this before. Yeah. And so I just try to remind myself, like, as with every other stage, there's amazing things that happen. Yeah. There's challenging things yeah. that happen. There's different things. You've never been through this stage yeah. before. I thankfully I have a prayer meeting on Wednesdays with some really amazing moms that are in different stages. Mm-hmm. And it's so helpful to have
yes.
those experiences to go to. We talked about puberty one day yeah. because I was like, we're entering this. Like, what do I say? What do I do? How do I have these conversations?
And did you record that by chance? Can you send it to me? Because I'm like, rah-rah.
I learned, like, it's normal. And it's so interesting because we walked through beginning of preteen with our boy, but it's uh-huh. so different with yeah. our girls.
Yep.
And she received I got a suggestion of, like, it's normal. Just don't make a big deal about it. Mm-hmm. Just answer the questions. Mm-hmm. And I got all worked up about this conversation and it wasn't so bad. Yeah. Like, it wasn't so bad. Yeah. And it's not like you have it one time right. and then you're done, right. but I have it a lot because I have three girls.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
yeah. And it's been a bonding moment yeah. too. Like yeah. those things that are scary, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, walking through having said some really horrible things or done some really scary things, like, it's a bonding moment. And those are things that we grow together mm-hmm. in. And yeah, I don't have all the answers, but I've learned how to find some.
Yeah.
And I'd say that's one of the biggest things, is just find a mom tribe that you yeah. can trust, and mm-hmm. those relationships that you can find that can be deep, that you can talk about the hard stuff with, because you yeah. can't share that with everybody yeah. all the time.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. And so I guess we, you know, we kind of had this plan, which was start with today,
yeah.
go back to the past, and then we'll finish up with the future.
Yeah.
So I think wrapping up, like, in that same, on that same thought of, like, one of the most helpful things for me all along in being a mom is being able to talk to moms who are a little bit further
yeah.
down the path
yeah.
than me. And so I think that, like, let's say that there are some moms listening who have really little ones.
Yeah.
And I know that one of the most common fears in me, and I hear this a lot, is, like, what am I doing in these super essential first years
yeah.
that is screwing my kids up for life? And I don't know I'm doing it. And I'm like, somehow, you know, for me, it was like going through my intense postpartum depression with my first, like, I just remember everything about, like, sitting on this couch day in and day out and not being able to stop crying mm. and her face looking at my face. And I would think, oh, I've seen those, like, videos about the, like, the still face experiment mm. and the, like, babies look to you to, like, regulate, like, co-regulate their emotions and figure out, you know, and I just, like, I couldn't stop crying.
Yeah.
And I just remember the like, absolute terror I had about that. And now, you know, and I think this is where I want to end with you, is, like, let's talk to moms who are in those early years about how we see our children demonstrate emotional intelligence and what that looks like in each of their personalities mm-hmm. and, like, these unexpected kind of gifts that we see in them having gone through these
yeah.
hard things together.
I always tell moms that are in the earlier stage of life, if you care, you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get so preoccupied with not messing up or not doing it wrong. And the fact that we're trying, mm-hmm. they're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I have Emma is like a mini me of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I already see some anxiety. And I think, gosh, you know, you just remind me of me in so many ways. And I wish that you didn't have to go through that. But I have the knowledge and all that I've learned through my counseling, through my experiences, of how maybe to identify that earlier mm-hmm. and give her the words to say or just like, it's okay to be a really sensitive kid. She has a huge heart, and that's a piece of why she worries so much, because she cares what other people think, or she just deeply feels for the world. And it's learning, it's giving her the tools to know that there's nothing wrong with you. And it's also kind of having conversations with my son or my husband, like, you have to be careful what you say. It might not affect you, but it deeply affects her. And just, you know, it's being a male, it's being a boy versus being a girl. And so just really building them up and parenting them in the way that, not that I wish I could have, because I don't blame my mom for things. But just having known, like, early on, we can, it's okay to be sensitive, and it's okay to cry, and it's okay to hold you for a little bit when you don't know what you need. And like, my son doesn't need to be parented that way, because it doesn't affect him yet. In certain ways. And then I have, Addie is very independent, and sometimes I expect her to be too old. But I've seen, like, as we're walking through this preteen years, like, I'm hoping that I'm developing a home where she can come and talk to me about those things. And I think she can, because we've had those conversations yet, whether it was about the postpartum experience or whether it's about someone being mean to her at school. Like, I just hope that my kids feel like they can share what they're feeling. And then I just pray that I have the right words and that I'm in the right space to respond. Cause some days I'm like, just stop crying. Like, you know, and that's not what I deeply want to say, but you get frustrated and like, we need to move past this, but I try to step back and give those hugs and just let her cry and let her feel that out. And then,
well, you know what the saying is. What if you care, you're doing it right.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. And so it's just, I mean, we learn so much from our kids. And we think that we're teaching them, but I think we can learn so much from them. And sometimes even when I need that from my son or I need that from my husband, my girls will give that to me. And that's really, really amazing to be able to be on the receiving end of just like, I understand, like, you're having a hard day. I'll give you a hug, or through tears saying, it's like, people cry. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're sad. But I'm a very emotional person, and I have one super emotional child. And so just being able to, in the midst of tears coming down your face, like, it's okay to cry. Or this winter, I think to all the kids, we just said, you know, mom's going through a rough time and she can't put you to bed today, but she just needs some quiet and she needs some space. And I need you to listen right now. I like wasn't doing well on a Monday. And then by the next Friday, I was driving to Helena for a gymnastics meet. And so just like having those conversations with what you need in that moment, like, is super helpful. And then to see them kind of respond without you having to prompt is that learning of understanding for you, for family, and for other kids or other individuals that they come in contact with, like, on a wide level of caring for those in the world and those that might not have what they have. And so that's my hope, that I'm doing that for my kids, and I care, so I'm doing it pretty well.
Well, and just having different personalities like that in the household, and having different ways that people express or don't express their emotions, and having to learn about that and accommodate for that. Like you said, like, you know, your son might say something really harsh to your super sensitive daughter, and then you have to, like, you have to give her lots of extra love and care, and then you have to talk to him and have a real conversation about, like, hey, that really impacts Emma because she's super sensitive.
Emma.
And we have that same dynamic. And what I've learned is, like, I can tell, I can teach each of them, like, okay, like, for me, it's Kendall. Kendall, like, you are super sensitive. You feel things deeply. That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to develop this, a little bit of this filter of, like, people are going to say things to you that are really hurtful and they're not true.
Right.
And you don't have to hold on to them. And then I have to turn to Kai and be like, hey, that really hurt Kendall. And yeah. I know because I was like her, and that will stay with her maybe for the rest of her life.
Right.
So the thing is, she's super sensitive. So if you say kind and things that are, like, encouraging, those stick just as much.
Yeah.
So anytime you can replace something harsh and critical with something kind, like, you are planting a seed that will stay with her for the rest of her life. Like, it's equal, right? And then you send them off into these spaces like school or these places like their extracurriculars, and they have that awareness of, like, oh, I'm around a whole group of people who may be really different than me in the way that they receive different things, the way they express and feel. And, like, I have that awareness because we talk about that in our house.
That's so
and
great.
A lot of kids maybe don't.
Yeah.
And, like, and that's okay. Like, it's not like everybody has to be talking about emotions all the time like we are at my house. But I will say it's been a gift in what we've come out of as a family, that they like really care about their friends.
That's so great.
You know, and and it's because they've learned, like, what that means and how it feels to learn each other's styles of care and then be able to show up for someone like
that. That's so amazing. And I'm just thinking, like, I sometimes take advantage of those moments, and sometimes someone interrupts me. Like, that's the nature of four kids, but it is just grabbing hold of those tiny moments where you can just step back and say, like, Micah, stop being annoying that or stop saying that because that really affects your sisters in a different way. Or I just keep going back to the, like, entering puberty thing. Like, there's just, he's going to need to be understood in a different way soon too. And I kind of laugh that my husband got three girls because he can't handle emotions as well as some other people. Cause his, so God gave us three girls. So we're just going to have a very emotional household, and he can learn how to be understanding. And so can my son.
Yeah. And to sometimes be the voice of reason.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like sometimes we need the people to be like, yo, yo, yo.
Right.
Like, we're all feeling a certain way, but, like, here's the facts.
Right.
And here's what needs to be done, you know, because there can be, our household can become kind of just like holy emotional land where, like, we really do have to get our pants on though and, like, walk out the door.
Right. You know? Exactly.
So,
Well, it's so cool that you are doing that for your girls.
Oh, I mean, I don't want anyone to think that I'm doing it perfectly by any means. And sometimes I'm really critical on the person who's being really critical, you know, which then is like, I hear myself in the way that I'm like, I'm reprimanding you for being critical in a really critical way. So, like, I don't do it perfectly either. This is more like, you know, I'm able, they're at school now, so I'm able to, like, back up and look at the day and be like, okay, well, here are the benefits of that, and here are some things to work on. It's always like that. It's never like, oh yeah, I nailed it, I'm gonna write a book about how to do this perfectly, you know.
I don't think any of us will, like, no, that's just part of it. But yeah, I think too, just knowing the right questions to ask, because I have a super emotional kind of tell me everything, and then I have two pretty, like, deal with it intellectually and take it all on. My son is like that, and my oldest daughter Addie is like that. But I've seen, just as she's gotten older and is dealing with more dynamics, especially in the preteen, like, older, I mean, it happens when they're little too, with like, someone said something mean to me at school, and but it, there's just more of it.
Yeah.
I've seen her open up a lot more, and it just warms my heart because I want her to be able to come and share those things with me. And yeah, it's really amazing to watch your child develop and then to start to see the fruit of the seeds that you've planted. I think, you know, you asked about talking to young moms, and what would I say? I would say, just keep on.
Yeah.
You don't see the progress that you're making on a day to day, but you will see it in a few years, and just keep trying and keep picking yourself up. Some days are good. There's always tomorrow. I just trust on grace and you just try again.
Yep.
Just try again tomorrow, because that consistency and that, like, forming a bond with your child and a trusting, nurturing environment pays off because then they start to come to you or they provide that to other people. Yeah. And, you know, my mom was able to kind of raise a lot of kids because our home was a welcoming place to share.
Yeah.
And I want that for us too. And I've seen glimpses of that too. And I think it will just continue as we go on, and it's sometimes easier to parent other kids that are not your own.
Oh yeah. I find almost always.
Yeah. So I would just say, whatever stage you're in, just give yourself a pat on the back and we all have great days and not great days, but if you're caring, you're doing it right.
Yeah. And on your not great days, call a friend to remind you that there will be great days.
Or maybe
again.
Give your kids to that friend and go for a walk.
Yeah, totally. And then on your great days, reach out to a friend who's maybe not doing well. Like that's that reciprocation that's so important and that we used to have when we all lived right next to each other and with each other. And now we have to make an effort to find that balance and be ready to identify like, uh-oh, I'm not doing okay. It's time for me to reach out for help. And then just always be at the ready, you know, when someone else.
And I think listen, because sometimes, you know, it's frustrating to my husband because he'll identify, oh, you're kind of going down a slump, but you don't hear it from him.
Yeah.
Like starting to be more aware of, like, listen to those that are kind of outside of it and that can see that, whether it's your partner or spouse, a family member, a friend. I just have some really great people in my life that know how to, like my mom, she's known me for 40 years and we've walked through a lot together. And a little piece of what happened with me this winter is she was caring for my grandma and we didn't have that connection, that kind of keeping up with everybody, each other every day. We live far apart, but you know, when I'm doing well, I call her every day and we went a little bit apart. So if you, And I say this to new moms, like check in with them and really like say, you can tell me what you're thinking and what you're feeling because it's not going to scare me.
Yes.
I've probably been there.
Yeah.
And just finding those people that can be that sounding board or that trust piece or that can identify for you maybe when you're not doing well, because sometimes you don't see it yourself.
Yeah, totally.
And It takes a village and we don't have to have it all together. We probably, if we think we have it all together, then just wait a minute.
Because
something new is coming, but
it's true. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, this was
much.
Really great. I'm just so glad that I got to meet you in person and just share. It's been really wonderful.
Yeah. And we will definitely put some show notes, sprinkle them in below this. So we'll definitely link to the TED Talk.
Great.
The Momity is no longer widely available because it was a while ago. But any other resources that were really helpful for you?
Yeah, I would say PSI's website is huge. I would say if you could find just a mom group, whether it's a support group or just, I went to the library just like, and I... leading my group, I'm finding it's harder and harder to make that connection. COVID was really hard. Yeah. It changed a lot of things. Yeah. But if you can just be vulnerable and reach out to that mom and just say, hey, our kids are about the same age, and then see, it just takes one person. And then maybe you can be the influence of others that start something. Just don't feel like you need to do it all by yourself.
Yeah.
So
even
MOPS
if it's
is a
just
really
a,
great,
yeah, I was gonna
a
say,
really great resource or it doesn't have to be MOPS, but that worked really well for me. But just kind of finding a mom group.
Like even just like a play group for your kids, because I remember one of the things that was really helpful for me when we moved to Helena, I was pregnant with Kendall and Kyla was really little, not even two yet, and we would go to the library like story hour.
Yeah.
And it was helpful because it was consistent and reliable. Like I knew it was going to be going on no matter what. And I remember one of the most helpful things about it was like when it was time to like pack up and go, like watching other moms try to like put their shoes on their kids and stuff. And I was like, oh, this is just as hard for everyone as it is for me. Or like people are like throwing Cheerios and screaming. Yes. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not doing terrible. This is normal. And just even being in that kind of an environment was so helpful for me, like leaving and being like, wow, so-and-so was really a piece of work today.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I'm glad that wasn't my kid, but it was like no shame on the mom, and watching that in someone else helped me to realize, like, oh, these kids are just tyrants sometimes.
They are.
Yeah.
And we can try so hard, and yet they're not robots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Libraries are awesome.
Libraries are awesome.
My best friends at the library.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks again.
You're welcome.
Mother Love is hosted by Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, the Montana Coalition, a nonprofit organization dedicated to the health and well-being of families who are expecting or raising little ones. Opinions and views expressed in these interviews do not necessarily represent the views of HMHB as an organization. We sincerely value the lived experiences shared on Mother Love, and we understand that not everyone will agree with or relate to all of what is shared. Mother Love exists to help our guests and listeners honor and embrace their own stories and experiences. If the content in this episode has caused you concern or distress, please reach out to someone you trust for support. Speaking up about our struggles is half the battle, sometimes more than half, and there are many providers who can and want to help. Visit our statewide online resource guide at www.hmhb-lifts.org to help you find resources in your area.
Thank you to our incredible editor and producer, Brooke Boone Miller, for sharing her gifts with us. She's a mom, and she gets it, and for that we are so grateful.